This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. My co-host, Meghna Chakrabarty, will be back tomorrow. Today, the conclusion of our special series, Generation Stuck, which follows the lives of 20-somethings struggling to make their way in the current economy. We've been following 26-year-old Catherine Round and 27-year-old Sam Mackin. In a moment, we'll talk to them and see how they're doing and what advice they have for their fellow millennials trying to get by and trying to move forward. But first, let's recap their stories. Catherine Round graduated from Tufts University 4 years ago with a focus on international relations. She moved to New York for a year to work as an actor, then to Argentina, where she taught English for a year, then back to the U.S. and moved in with her parents on the North Shore. She found work as a bartender in Cambridge and struggled for 2 more years to look for a job. Despite a long and frustrating search for work, Catherine told us she doesn't regret her choices.
I claim full responsibility for how I ended up where I am. That being said, I also claim full responsibility for the opportunities I have pursued, you know, doggedly, for the jobs I've applied to, for the interviews that I have aced, for the connections that I have made. And yet, that hasn't come to any fruition. I feel like for all of my efforts and decisions, only the negative ones count.
When you get rejected left and right for 2 years, it's hard to accept that, absorb it, and continue on your way still thinking positive thoughts.
The lack of opportunities sort of made me decide, okay, this isn't going to work out right now. I'm going to have to take a different path in the meantime, and hopefully, that'll work out. And if that doesn't work out, I'll take another path.
Now, since those recordings were made, things have progressed for Catherine. She picked up and moved to New Orleans for a $10,000 a year job with AmeriCorps. So that's Catherine Round, who we'll meet in a moment. For his part, 27-year-old Sam Mackin studied journalism and hoped to be a foreign correspondent. That hasn't happened. And for the past 2 years, he's been living with his father in central Massachusetts, working as a waiter. Like Catherine, he takes responsibility for the choices he's made, but he says the tough economy hasn't helped him.
I didn't know how rough it was going to be until the economy crashed. Yeah, I'm partially responsible, but the other hand is that this gigantic thing happened that affected my entire universe. And I'd done everything that everybody told me to do that was a good idea, and I still ended up in a position I didn't expect to be in. If I were going to go back, I would probably pick a different major. I would probably go to a different school, maybe something that would give me a career. I'm most concerned about being stuck in this kind of limbo for years.
And that's 27-year-old Sam Mack, and he's still living at home with his dad, still waiting tables and still looking for something better. And let me introduce my guests now. First of all, Sam Mackin, right here in our studio in Boston. Great to have you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And thanks for letting us follow your story over these past many weeks. It's been great. Also joining us from New Orleans is Catherine Round. Catherine, it's a pleasure to have you.
Great to be here.
And we also have in the studio Lauren Stiller-Rickleen. She's executive in residence at Boston College's Center for Work and Family. She's also founder and president of the Rickleen Institute for Strategic Leadership, which offers consulting on building a multi-generational workplace. And she's currently working on a book about millennials in the workforce. And Lauren, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Great to have you. Glad to be here.
So let me start, if I can, with our let me invite our listeners into this conversation. We want to get your involvement in this conversation, listeners. Are you a 20-something who's been struggling in this economy but has figured out a way forward? Were you stuck, but are you now unstuck? Are you a parent of a millennial who has found a route forward? And if so, what's the roadmap? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Catherine Round, let me start with you. We heard about a long, sort of frustrating search that you had for a job. You've got one now. You're in New Orleans. Tell us a little something about what you're doing.
Okay. So AmeriCorps, I guess. And it's pretty great, to be honest. I'm actually working for a segment of AmeriCorps called Community Health Corps. So they place you in different community health related positions throughout the country. So I'm currently working as the community outreach coordinator for a community health center out in New Orleans East, actually. So in a pretty remote area, but it's pretty good. I like it.
It's great. New Orleans is a great city, but you had to pack up and say goodbye to Boston, where a lot of your family and friends are. How difficult was that?
You know, it was hard, but if you look at my resume, I sort of do that. So it wasn't too difficult.
Oh, that's right. New York, Argentina. Yeah. So New Orleans is actually pretty close to home relative to Argentina anyway.
Yeah, the language at least, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Now, just for listeners that might not know, AmeriCorps, of course, is sort of the civilian version of the Peace Corps. So it's sort of volunteer work, but sort of paid, right? It's like a paid internship? Is that sort of the way
right.
to describe it?
Right. I like to call it stipended volunteership. There's a certain amount of money that they give you that can cover your basic expenses. And if you're really, really careful, you can probably scoot by. Mm-hmm. But it's also good to get another job.
Yeah. So are you doing that? Because do we have the figure right? You get about $10,000 a year from AmeriCorps. So
yeah,
obviously
it's about $1,000 a month before taxes.
So obviously you need to supplement to get by.
Yeah, ideally. I'm actually in the process of, ironically enough, finding another bartending position.
Another bartending position. All right. Well, so, you know, we reported on your sort of decision to go for that AmeriCorps job, and now you're there in New Orleans. You know, what's the big lesson from your experience? What do you take away from sort of these last few years that have landed you in New Orleans?
I guess that you sort of have to adapt to changing circumstances. And I think Sam will agree with me on this, that you just have to take responsibility for your actions, which I think we both do. But at the same time, you kind of have to take a step back and look at how things are headed and realize, you know, you have these plans and they're really not going to work out the way you wanted them to. So you're going to have to adapt and see what the best road to take is. It's going to be convoluted, but, you know, I think that you tend to end up somewhere that you're supposed to be in the end. So if I take anything away, it's that you just gotta keep trying. You gotta do something. You know, you can't quit.
Well, Catherine, it's great to have you on the show, and congratulations. And stand by. Thank I want to move over to Sam Mackin now. And Sam, you were trained in journalism,
yeah.
But working at your local newspaper pretty much killed that dream. Do I have that right?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I was talking to Lauren earlier about it, and it wasn't so much working for the paper. It was the fact that it was like severe underemployment. It was the fact that it was something that I had done basically to get, you know, resume work done and to get, you know, writing material together. But it wasn't working out the way that I was really hoping that it would, that it would kind of inspire me and that I would get more work and that, you know, maybe I'd be, you know, recognized and get some accolades in some way. But that didn't really happen.
So what fields are you pursuing now? Is that dream of international journalism still alive, or are you moving in a different direction?
Not particularly. Right now, I'm doing two things, one of which is I've been applying to a lot of federal positions, which I know Catherine's doing AmeriCorps. A lot of the jobs that I'm looking at, they actually kind of cut you a little deal if you've done something with the Peace Corps or AmeriCorps. And then the other bit that I've been trying to look into is trying to get into public health, which I've been trying to. I just last week got a volunteering gig with a local hospital that I'm trying to kind of finagle into a larger kind of career-based thing.
And in the meantime, you're working at home with you're living at home with your dad, and as we mentioned, waiting tables. So I'm wondering, finding the balance here between working at a job to sustain you, but also making sure you have the time to do what you need to do to move forward and pursue your dreams, is that something that's a bit of a challenge to balance?
Sometimes, I mean, I was talking to Lauren earlier about, you know, having basically like a night to myself during the week that I'll end up doing something 6 days out of the week, and then I have a day, you know, to not work, which is, you know, frustrating. It gets very frustrating just to get the balance in and be able to do what you want to do. But it's something that you need to do. It's something that I need to do. Otherwise, you know, I get what Kat was saying, that I have to do something. Otherwise, you know, it's the only alternative that I have.
Sure. Well, Lauren Stiller-Reclean, let me come over to you. And I've got a bunch of specific questions I want to ask you, but you've been patiently listening here. What's your take? What do you hear in these two stories relative to the work you've been doing talking to millennials?
Well, what I'm hearing in these stories are it stands for all of the stories that I hear from millennials today. And part of it, I think, is this difficulty of growing up in a world where you're told you can be anything you want to be, pursue your dreams, do what you want, and then graduating into an economy in which that just can't happen the way that you were brought up to think it could happen. So one of the things I think that you're hearing,
the baby boomer parent generation sort of said, do it.
Absolutely.
Go for it. Follow your dreams. And
that's how we raised our millennial children.
Yeah.
So now the question is, okay, you're coming into this incredibly difficult economy. And the other part of this is you're coming not only a difficult economy, but where all the projections had been that baby boomers were going to be leaving the workforce, opening up all these other opportunities for the other generations. That's not happening. So there's this compression taking place that's impacting millennials and Gen X. And so the question is, how do you move forward with all of that difficulty? And that's really, you know, you're hearing people trying to work their way through that.
And so let's tackle that question. How do we move forward? We've heard both from Sam and from Catherine this word adapt, be flexible. That was certainly the case in Catherine's situation. Now she's ends up in New Orleans. Is that sort of flexibility the key, one of the key themes here?
I think I love the word adaptability. And I would add two other words to that, creativity and being entrepreneurial. I think you have to be creative about how, first of all, thinking about what will plan B be, just in case plan A is not working as I had hoped, and how can I creatively get there? How can I use entrepreneurial skills to think differently than I might have expected I'd have to think? What kind of network do I have? How do I use that network to parlay into other kinds of opportunities? So adaptability, creativity, entrepreneurship, I think, are the watchwords for this generation.
And what about this notion? I'm really intrigued by this theme that this generation that was raised by baby boomers who sort of said, follow your dreams. Should we be telling young people who are graduating into this economy that maybe it's not such a good idea to follow those dreams? In other words, is that advice, does it still have resonance?
I'm an optimist at heart, and I believe that people should do work they love to do. So I would never want to tell my children otherwise. I'd not want to tell other people otherwise. I think what we have to do, though, is one of the failings, I think, of the baby boomer generation in raising this particular generation is we also solved their problems for them along the way. We were very engaged and over-involved, and so now it's not only facing this difficult economy, but coming out a little bit less skilled at dealing at being as independent as other generations might have been in their early 20s, and also not being as savvy, not having those skills innately, because so much of their earlier life had been programmed for them and scheduled. So I think that maybe when you're thinking about child rearing issues, to be thinking about how you help your kids figure out how to solve problems, I would never tell somebody not to go after or pursue whatever dream they have.
Well, Sam and Catherine, I'd love to ask you to respond to what Lauren said. I mean, does what she described, was that your experience? Let me start with you, Sam, this idea of parents who might have been a little bit overly programming and not preparing you in that way.
I don't think that was my experience at all. I think that my parents are very much into having me be independent as early as possible. And, you know, they weren't really helicopter parents at all. And I don't think that played out into why I'm in my current position. I think that one of the main reasons why I'm where I'm at is that I severely underestimated the skill set that was going to be required for me when I got out of school. Mm-hmm. And that I thought that the skill set that I had was going to be good enough to get into, you know, something, you know, again, bottom rung, entry level, something that's at least on a career path, but, you know, isn't, you know, the end of my career. It wouldn't be the last thing to do. And that's one of the daunting things that I've been dealing with for the past couple of years, is the fact that I have, in my opinion, a lack of a skill set that I think is going to propel me into something else.
So, Lauren, advice for Sam about that?
Oh, poor Sam's been listening to that for the last half hour before the show.
I've been enjoying it, though.
Right. I'm going to actually ask you to hold that advice because I want to ask Catherine that same question about sort of over-programming parents, Catherine, if that was your experience.
What Lauren was saying certainly resonates with me on a certain level. While I don't think that my parents were over-programming, and I really hope they don't get mad at me for saying this, but I think that they were actually maybe over-supportive, if that makes sense. What Lauren was saying about, you know, your parents tell you can be anything you want, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole world is your oyster, and I was always told that was just such a wonderful thing to have. But in the end, I became a bit of a dilettante. so I think that I never really was forced to be, you know, decisive in this is what I'm going to do. And so the results, going over to what Sam said, is that now I find myself pretty good at a lot of things, but not really great at any one thing.
Interesting.
And I don't have that skill set that you need now to really make yourself stand out in any specific field. You know, my uncle likes to say I'm good at cocktail parties.
and that's a very common theme as
sure.
well. And that's, you know, one of the things we're also seeing is when you're told you can be anything you want in a world in which there seems to be infinite choices, and then you come out of school and you hit, you know, you're into your 20s, and suddenly just the fact of having to narrow those choices is incredibly stressful and incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. Because now it's like, well, wait a minute, I could have been anything, and look at all these wonderful anythings that mm-hmm. are out here. Which one should I pick?
Interesting. Now, you were going to offer some advice to Sam, which I'd be really interested in hearing, actually, even though you've been bombarding him with it for the half hour before we came on the air.
All right. Well, so how do I just synthesize it really quickly for you? I think what I was trying to probe with Sam is whether he was leaving journalism behind because he felt he had to or because he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one piece of it. If it is that he really wanted to still pursue it, then I had thoughts about trying to seek internships, using his opportunities here to meet individually with some of the folks at the station mm-hmm. to talk about what kind of volunteer work or internships might be available for him. So part of it was just trying to ascertain which are you going in a different direction because it's in your heart to do that or because you just feel depressed about where you've been. And then the other part is, you know, then we talked about this, the health options and pursuing that and the time it would take. But the point about that is you have to just get started. Whichever route you're choosing, you have to just get started so you don't find yourself 3 years down the road again saying, geez, I wish I had done more.
Well, Lauren, Sam, Catherine, stand by. We've got a lot of listeners who want to get in on this conversation. And listeners, we are talking about the conclusion of our series, Generation Stuck. We're sort of asking the question, what's the roadmap out? How to get unstuck for people who may be stuck? So you can join the conversation, 800-423-8255. Let's go to Ethan, who's calling from Lowell. Hi, Ethan. You're on the air.
Hi there. I am excited to talk. And just to let you know that I had I'm 29, and I became unstuck about 2.5 years ago or so. I was very much traveling seasonally, moving around every 3 to 4 months to follow where the warm weather was to pursue my career in the outdoor industry. My real piece of advice, a couple of them at least, is one is don't pile any more debt other than what you've got for school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't buy a big fancy car or get a bunch of credit card debt because once you get unstuck, it's going to take you years to pay that off, and you're going to regret it. Trust me. And then the other piece is really to get my job. I had to work for as a contract employee where I'm at for a while and make connections and build my network, just as folks were saying earlier, so that you know, when one of those baby boomers did retire and moved out of the position that I now hold, I was the first person on the list. I barely had to apply. They knew who I was. I had worked almost 2 years there as a seasonal employee.
So get your foot in the door, Ethan. It sounds like you're saying get your foot in the door above all things, Ethan.
Right. It doesn't work to just going on the internet and sending out resumes to as many random people that don't know you didn't work at all. I had to know somebody. And that's how the world is. You have to know somebody to give you a chance on that first job. They've got to trust you.
Ethan, this is great advice. Lauren's nodding her head in here. The credit card debt seems to go without saying, but this idea of understanding the importance of getting your foot in the door rather than just sending in resumes.
One of the things when I'm speaking on this topic or training on this topic that I emphasize all the time is build and maintain it in an organized way, your network. You have to get to know people and network your way into positions. And Ethan is exactly right. You start out in a contract position or an internship position, but then people get to know you. And once they get to know you and see your skills and see your abilities, that will give you greater opportunities. But you have to have that network to be building all through your career.
Catherine Round, I'm wondering down there in New Orleans, I know AmeriCorps isn't something that you sort of do forever, but do you see this as a good first, second, or third step, whatever you want to call it, toward building this network and getting to the next place that you want to get to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that this was definitely the best option that I had presented for me when I chose to come down here. And the reason I chose to do it is because of exactly what Lauren said. You know, you got to be standing in traffic if you want to get hit, right? So
I might not have put it that way. But
well, no, of course not. But
an unfortunate image, but I know what you're talking about.
Right. You know, you have to be out there. You have to be networking. Absolutely. You have to be in the right industry. You have to be seen. You have to have people knowing that you're there and that you're capable. And while maybe long term I don't necessarily want to be involved, you know, in New Orleans or in the U.S. or in this specific type of public health, you certainly do want to be out there at all, you know? So I completely agree. And I think that was a lot of the propulsion behind my choosing to come down here was to start making a network.
Well, let's take a couple more calls. Charles is calling from Brookline. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to, I guess, add to the conversation a little bit of hope for, you know, for some other millennials out there. I went through a similarly painful experience for a number of years. I lost my job when I was working in New York in 2009, along with, you know, double digits of the rest of the city. While I didn't think there was any prospect for continuing on in there, I had enough money saved up to last me a few months out in Cambodia, where I had done a little bit of work previous to that for a nonprofit. So I had a few connections, took what money I had, went out there and found a job in something that was a little bit more concrete than what I'd studied when I was in school. Got a little bit of, got some skills in a few different software systems, and came back to the States, and I've been working that into a career. I'm now doing, I'm pretty stable, I've got a nice place, and living in the Boston area, and I'm doing pretty well. So it's, you know, the opportunities are out there, but not to be too trite, the adage that desperate times call for desperate measures is sometimes quite true.
Well, Charles, that's a great story. And Lauren, I'm hearing in Charles a story about someone who wasn't afraid to take a leap.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
From Brookline to Cambodia.
Yeah. You know, I saw a fascinating piece of data recently that 35% of millennials globally are working in their own business in addition to whatever job they are holding. That's a pretty staggering number, I think, that more than a third of millennials are actually developing their own business. Probably a lot of it is internet-based, and but it says something about both this sense of having to be entrepreneurial and thinking about what your options are, even as you're working in some other position to pay your bills to make sure you're not in debt. And I think Charles's example is a great one of taking a skill set, developing it somewhat, and then using your network to come back and do what you want to do more locally.
Catherine and Sam, I want to encourage you both to just jump in as you hear stuff here. I'm going to move on to a couple of callers, but don't be shy about sort of jumping in when you want to. Let's go to Teresa, who's calling from Quincy. Hi, Teresa. You're on the air.
Hi there. Yeah, I wanted to call in. I'm actually a parent of two of my own children that I raised in Concord, and they went to a fabulous university and were liberal arts majors and kind of came out in the last few years graduating without a specific career. I became a special education teacher and had a job set up for me at Yale's Adolescent Locked Unit when I graduated. They're in a very different economy. They have a very different background. What's been amazing to me as a parent is watching their creativity. They went into fields that they absolutely did not know anything about. They've my older son has really secured himself in something now that he's starting to really love, and he's learned about it. He's working somewhat in the construction and technology field, which is not anything he thought he would do. And he's been successful. My daughter, who's younger, she's 24, is doing what you were talking about earlier. She's actually very entrepreneurial. She works three jobs. And in the beginning, as a parent who was a helicopter parent, I had a hard time watching that. I wanted to save her and fix it. And what I realized as I let go is this kid's very capable. She was star of her soccer team. She was a pre-med bio major for a while.
Well, Teresa, it's a great pair of stories about your kids, and I'm happy for them, and thanks for the call. And Catherine, it brings to mind, listening to Teresa, I remember early in our reporting on some of the reports you did, talking about parents who were sort of, I want to be careful how I say this, overly involved, but I remember they were concerned about this idea of you going to AmeriCorps because they were saying, what? I mean, come on, you got to get a job that really pays, right? So have they come around to this decision? Have they let go, as Teresa was talking about having to let go?
I think that they completely accept my decision. I think that they realize.
She says,
and I do mean that in a positive way, because I think that they do realize that I'm going to make my own decisions in the end. And they know that I want to get involved with public health, and they recognize that this was really the only viable route. They are concerned. They're like, well, you know, you're pretty much going into social services, nonprofits. You're never really going to be able to make a strong living, but you never know, right? And even that's not really where my primary goal is right now. But they certainly would be open to my exploring other options.
I see. Okay, so they've begun to let go, but maybe not completed the process.
Right. Well, they accept it. You know, they know that this is what I want to be doing, so.
No, I understand. Let me ask both you, Catherine and Sam, and I'll start with Sam. You know, I'm trying to sort of put a realistic time frame on it, but let's say a year from now, where are you hoping to be? Where if things really go well starting today, where are you a year from now?
Hopefully, in my ideal universe, I'd be back in school. Maybe not even for something I'm planning on doing right now, but I feel that really, despite the fact that the majority of my friends have master's degrees and work as bartenders, I know that a big component of what I'm doing right now is education, and that if I actually went back and got a post-grad degree, that my options, again, I could develop a skill set, I could get a better idea, and that my options would be a little brighter.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I mean, I don't know. Hopefully I'll still be, you know, working, and I won't be impoverished somewhere.
Well, we wish you all the best, and we're sure that you will get there. Catherine Round, how about you? I mean, I know you're going to be doing AmeriCorps, but sort of what's next? What do you look at? What do you see when you look out there on the horizon?
Well, you know, it's only about an 11-year program, so this future is very real to me. I definitely have to make some decisions. And if we're going to say an ideal future within 1 year, I would say I would either be back to school getting my master's and somebody else would be footing the bill, or I would be doing some sort of a fellowship in public health abroad in a developing nation. And I think those kind of go hand in hand. And I'm actually in the process of pursuing both of these options, but in the ideal worlds, I would be able to do one of them.
And Lauren, I have a sort of final thought for you. And, you know, as someone who studied this generation, I'm just wondering what you make of some of the words that are tossed around out there to describe this generation. Because as we've done this series and we've sort of gotten to know people like Sam and Catherine, I don't think they apply, but we've done, you know, conversations around, are they too self-centered? Are they too needy? Are they unrealistic? And yet I don't hear that. I mean, I hear a generation of people who are working really hard to adapt to a world that has changed dramatically.
I completely agree. In fact, the reason why I came around to writing this book is the idea that there is complete myths out there about this generation. They are remarkably talented. They are willing and able and desirous of working hard. And I think all of us have to figure out how to help them be whatever it is we told them that they could be in pursuing their dreams. But they are a remarkable, remarkable generation.
Well, thank you all for this conversation. Catherine Round and Sam Mackin, they're the audio artists for WBUR's special series, Generation Stuck. You can find their stories at genstuck.wbur.org. Catherine, Sam, good luck to you both, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And Lauren Stiller-Ricklin, executive in residence at Boston College's Center for Work and Family and founder and president of the Ricklin Institute for Strategic Leadership. Thank you for coming
on. Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, we've got some decidedly non-Christmassy suggestions for the upcoming holiday weekend. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.